Yo, what's up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of Kill the Mockingbird. I'm your host, Sean Chris. And you know I'm always here with my homeboy, Seabass. This is the Truth Report. Well, we're a little late on uploading some of our IG feed to our RSS feed, but we're catching up, and we got a lot more stuff coming for you. We got an interview with James from We the People Radio. We got a swapcast with Talkie Time. We got another swapcast with Steaks for Breakfast podcast. A few other things in the pipeline. And, you know, help support the show by going to Bandcamp and looking up Sean Chris's music. Donate what you can. You can find my music on Spotify, Mania, Taylor Sacrifice, Frank Gallagher, and the album Dystopian Paradise will be dropping about May 21st, 2021. So yeah, keep on the lookout on all that. And enjoy the episode.
They're taking what you're saying to them, and they're hoping that you are what you talk. Let's be about everything we drop, because we're gonna get tested on it. If the people on the street don't test us on it, God's gonna test us on it.
Kill the Mockingbird, Truth to Report, with Sean Chris and Sebastian Farr.
Kick his ass, Seabass!
Wake up!
Wake up, America!
Wake the fuck up! We'll get fucked the fuck up!
Personal accounts that are kind of on like the truther side of things, you know, they share their truth, and a lot of the time they're pretty spot on, and they're telling me like, oh, Pete, like they're getting pictures and stories taken down for violations of terms, but there's never really a clear definition of what everyone is doing wrong with this. Like, they keep it vague and stuff, so there's no real recourse, so you can't actually have a way of fighting back and getting back, you know, out of the shadow ban. I feel like they keep it on for a lot of people. I think I have been for a period of time, too. I've been kind of not really posting much at all.
Yeah, it seems like to be, like, to me, I think it's like a time period, right? Depending on, like, the severity of what, like, because obviously there's tons of accounts. They can't, like, look for each account, you know what I mean? Like, they can see and they have algorithms. Like, for instance, I have another account that I'm trying to grow right now, right? So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do a couple Instagram promotions, because if you try anything outside of Instagram to promote, like, it can violate the terms and all that too, right? They try to get all the money. So I was like, all right, I'll just do, like, a little, like, $20, $30 fucking week little promotion for this song. So maybe, you know, attract more people to come to the page, whatever. As soon as I post that, they deny it within about like 10, 15 minutes. And when it looks to deny, when I ask, like when it tells you the reason for denying, I have it in my phone. But it just basically says that, like, you can't say anything harmful about any race, gender. But like, it didn't even say nothing. And then I was like, well, is AI racist? Because like, I posted up the homie song and it says caught in the trap. The only thing that it says, literally nothing in that shit. And I mean, like in the hashtags, it says like hip hop and stuff like that. So like, to me, I'm like, man, because obviously that was the AI, because after it tells you all these examples of like how you can't use race and gender. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I didn't say nothing about that whatsoever. And then I do it. It says you can put it for review. I put it for review, which I'm guessing goes through a real person, because then it instantly gets approved. They're probably like, what the fuck? Like, this is just a regular song. Like, there's literally nothing controversial. It's like anybody's music. Like, I mean, maybe like, I don't know if he cusses or not, but you know what I mean? Like, it's nothing crazy. And then it was just weird. This is twice that has happened to me on putting people's music up, trying to give them a little promotion. And like I said, they do push it through, but it's just kind of telling, like, it seems like it's the AI. It
certainly is. They definitely use it to kind of a preliminary ban hammer, basically using, you know, buzzwords, certain hashtags and a bunch of different variables that kind of make it easier for them. And then, like you were saying, with the, you know, review system, that's when it actually goes in front of a person, probably, because, you know, they don't want to hire this many people to actually censor the whole of the interweb. It's that'd be way too much of a overhead for these big tech companies.
Not even just overhead, if you think about it, gives too many opportunities for someone to put their ideology out there. They still want their message and their narrative. So like, not everybody that works for big tech agrees with everything, you know what I mean? Even if they spot some of the things, I'm sure they have like limits. So that's why they're like, oh, AI doesn't have limits.
I mean, and you're seeing that now, too, with a lot of the censorship and bans coming through. It's a lot of progressive leftist types that are kind of stepping outside of that main ideology. You know, they're getting the hammer now.
Yeah, like, I mean, one of the first ones for the left that was really getting hammered is Glenn Greenwald. You know what I mean? He got hammered for when he was Snowden, the whole Snowden thing. And that's when he moved to like the left. Cause he, and, but the weird thing was even after the Snowden thing, people like the super left, you know, like Democracy Now and the NPRs, they like backed Greenwald. But once he started going against like some of the policies that Obama put in place and Biden, which, I mean, people are just trying to question what our leadership, supposed leadership or representation is doing. And it seems that anybody, whether left, right, center, steps out of line, they're just going to crush you with their huge media machine. And that's why shouts out to, I want to show you this real quick. I wore the shirt for you. Got the Operation Mockingbird shirt on.
Oh, the new merch. Yes, sir. All right.
Not me. It's not me, though. That's not my merch. Okay. I wish it was. That's a Forbidden Clothes.
That's in the pipeline, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We got some stuff. I'm working on some stuff. That's why I had a pushback, too. Like, I was like, I need just a day to rest because I was been editing and I've been learning new. Because it's like I'm learning, too. You know what I mean? So every time I'm like trying to figure out faster ways to be able to record and edit and get it onto the podcast. But then I'm like, oh, now I want to do music. You know what I mean? So sometimes I put too much on my plate, but I'm getting a couple designs. I'm going to shoot you some of the designs to show you what we got going. Because I think it's going to be fun. Because I'm going to start the Kill the Mockingbird production so we could push more podcasts and just the music that I like. Because I figure we got to start taking over the entertainment and media industry or it's going to forever be saturated.
Yeah, we can't be on the tail end of the culture war. You have to be involved. You actually have to be there at the culture side of things. You know, culture is upstream or politics is downstream from culture, as they say.
Yeah, for sure. And what politics is now is like a celebrity. Like, it's the same shit, man. Certainly. The blue
looking,
check.
Looking at the impeachment and just, you know, all the emotional leverage and rhetoric like they're trying to use with that. And then even the AOC stuff. And
just to go off the cuff a little bit, let me ask you, because I haven't really got to talk to you in a minute. It seems like forever, man. what's it called? What's your feel on what's going on with this whole impeachment trial? Like, what do you see it like I see it? I see it as a show. I just see that they're doing a typical political show and they're going to get their constituents riled up.
Oh, yeah. You know, the media and the left political hegemony in general, they made a lot of gains off of, you know, the Trump derangement syndrome type propaganda. So they want to keep that going, I think. And at the same time, it deflects away from Biden and a lot of the left.
It's great cover. Great cover.
Yeah. It's a good distraction. It is a show. It's reality TV. And you look at, like, if you actually watch the hearings and, like, the evidence they're putting forward, it's a show. Like, they're doctoring tweets, you know, putting fake blue check marks on people, you know, they're editing clips out of context and they're not including the part where Trump said, go and make your voices heard peacefully.
Yeah.
And they're saying he's inciting the violence. And it's just, you know, I don't think it's going to pass. They, you know, they voted yes to make it a constitutional thing. But when it comes to convict, they need 60 plus votes. I don't think they're going to get it.
But then what happens? Then are we going to dissess the president to now that we're going to – do we get to go – then do we go back to Obama or even – because they call him a war criminal. So even more than that, do we go back to Bush and Cheney?
Yeah. Then I mean
– Clinton?
It should open the door to that, but you know they're not going to go after the globalist chills that we're not.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, the global
– not a chance.
They're going to for sure go after – keep teaming up and trying to make it what they're doing. Trying to control the narrative. It's been just funny to me. I've talked to a lot of people. It's hard to get through to people because, like, it's still that to that level of where they hate Trump so much. Like, no matter what I say, if I disagree with them, they automatically call me a Trump supporter. I get really sick of that, man. I'm like, dude, man, you don't even know what my opinion is. We probably would agree on some of the things that people don't understand that. They think that, like, oh, you know, you think this way. No, that's how, maybe I don't believe in this, like, you know, not that I don't believe in COVID, but when I'm saying this is overblown and all the stuff that we talk about that we feel is, which is why everybody's getting taken off of. It's just something that we believe in transparency. We believe in scientific debate and we think there should be more of that. And then like when we push for that, it's like, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist or you're a Trump supporter or you're a, no, man, I'm a real person that wants to live a free life for everybody. I mean, like, especially myself, of course, we're all selfish. We're humans.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the battle lines have been drawn for a while now, but I feel like a lot more people on the side of going against the narrative are feeling kind of intimidated now, seeing so much censorship going on other people in, you know, similar kind of camps, that the voices are kind of being silenced on their own. You know, there's a little bit of self-censorship going on because people are afraid. And
we just said it. You know what I mean? I mean, I think it's because we're on their platform and we're at their will. And I get that, but, that's why I'm working on the website. It's not as easy as I thought it would to be. I think I'm going to, if all fails, I'm going to be able to stream audio, and that's cool enough. We don't need video. You know what I mean? It's cool, but yeah. I just wanted to also still have like a chat. You know what I mean? Like, I think that that's important. So we could, when people are in the room, they could see what we're talking about and they could join in and say what they want to say. Cause obviously, like, you could see how much, like, look at right now, bro. We usually average at least 20 people in here. Like, you know what I mean? And before that, we were getting like 40, 50, 60. And that's when I got banned for a month. You know what I mean? They're just slowing down and putting us in our place, trying to tell us like, hey, shut the fuck up.
And it's funny too, because like the normies are really like, you know, on board with the censorship. They're like, it's a private company, but they don't understand how many other accounts are being censored for so many various things. You know, the noose is tightening, but they don't even like see it.
Well, my argument is and I agree with you on that. But my argument to them, I keep telling them, I go, okay. So then if they're a private business, then they don't have to serve you based on your race, sexual orientation, or your religion or culture, right? And they go, that's different? No, I thought they were a private company. If they're a private company, then don't worry about what they pay their employees, right? Don't worry about minimum wage. They're a private company. They should be able to do whatever they want. So that's what I don't understand. This argument about private company is a fake one to me, because I used to argue a lot for it, like, because I leaned a lot heavy on libertarianism, you know what I mean? Because I believe in ideology, I mean, individualism, where people, you know, take care of their own if you build your own business. But as far as what they're talking about, I'm like, then it can go both ways, man. It can go both ways, and you don't see that. You want the argument that benefits you, but the one that doesn't benefit you, you don't want. Tomorrow I'm supposed to debate this guy. He's the original guy that set up for it, but he had to do something. But I was like, all right, well, I told him, let's just have a discussion. Not really. We were going to do that, but I said, let's just do like this. Let's just kind of have a discussion. And I told him kind of like, I'm going to call it the, because I'm the disinfected anarchist versus the progressive, because he says it's progressive. And I'm going to see. Okay. We're going to talk about current events, not like literally breaking down, but like we're just going to, like what we're doing kind of, you know, just chopping it up. And I want to see what his perspective is on things, because he's heavy on the mask, but he seems pretty reasonable. Like, he was very reasonable talking to, compared to like how Twitter is. And I know I can be fucking an asshole on Twitter for sure, man. I talk mad shit because it's like the real shit. I'll be like, well, fuck you then, man. I don't give a fuck.
There's a lot of radical stuff on there that doesn't get like, you know, there's no counter argument allowed. So I feel like it's really frustrating when it's an echo chamber like that, because there'll be the most radical statements and thoughts going out there. And a good example of the censorship that's coming back to bite these people on the left was a columnist for The Guardian who just recently got fired for posting on Twitter about the U.S. military funding towards Israel. And he had been one of the, you know, first people to call for, you know, cancel culture and deplatforming and censorship. Comes back to bite him personally once he talks about the wrong thing.
Exactly, because he stepped out of line. And to me, like they always say, it's that whole foreign policy, CIA foreign policy. You step out of that foreign line, that foreign policy, that narrative, you're done. Like, they're going to push you out of the media. They're going to rip you apart. And right now they're just letting, like, that's not what's happening right now. Right now it's just that they're letting everybody rip each other apart to distract people from everything that's really fucked up. Like, I keep telling a lot of the Trump supporters too, I go, I know you guys like to say about the economy, how well it was doing. I said, but it was a facade. I said, it was the same bubble since 2008 that they try to repair. They try to patch. He never could fix it. I'm not blaming it all on him. I'm just saying he furthered it because that's what everybody does. He did the typical because it's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, he increased the spend. He went along with an increase in spending. We, you know, built up even more on our deficit. And he was, you know, kind of saying how he was wanting, you know, during his first election cycle that he was wanting to bring that down at least. But he actually was not able to follow through on that, which kind of shows it's like it's I feel like it's engineered to kind of be a collapse economically like this with the hyperinflation and spending and, you know, 60% of all bills in circulation were printed within the last year.
Isn't that crazy?
That's nuts.
That's crazy. I forgot about that. Glad you brought that up.
Verge of bursting, I feel like.
Yeah, it was already like that. I'm a big Peter Schiff guy, and Peter Schiff called this in 2000. Well, not in 2008, before 2008. He was like ringing the alarm. And then, you know, Ron Paul too. And they're both would say the same. They kept saying the same thing about Trump. That's the arguments that I listen to. Instead of this whole argument of like, oh, he's a crazy Nazi. To me, that's all a show. And it just distracts everybody from the actual fact that the U.S. petrodollar is about to it may be not worthless, but like we could be in a USSR situation where it's hundreds of dollars to buy a loaf of bread, maybe thousands.
Weimar Germany is a good example. Yep. 1950s Hungary is a good example.
Oh, that's
they had even worse inflation than Weimar Germany. Like I think it was even like 10,000 times worse. The inflation on their currency, it's madness. And I feel like we're on the verge of that. Once it's kind of inflated based off of like there's an abundance of supply in our consumer economy, but once a particular necessary goods become short in supply, then the hyperinflation will come in. You know, once gas becomes very limited or certain types of food like red meats, we kind of saw that when during the toilet paper shortages last year. Potential for a lot of craziness this coming year. We've already, I mean, it's barely a month, almost month and a half, and so much has happened. It's crazy, man.
Yeah, and it's been cool and like relaxing a little bit this week has been, I mean, there's just that little show they're having with impeachment, but that, to me, that's not really much excitement. I mean, besides like the regular, you know, New York's chaos, and then, you know, there was that active shooter in Buffalo, Minnesota, which I didn't even know there was a Buffalo, Minnesota, but that sounded like some kind of a disgruntled employee situation. I'm not sure. I didn't like super look into it, but that's what it sounded like to me. But now it's like I'm waiting for the more of the storm because it's just like they keep trying to hit us, but I'm just looking at all the spending because it's kind of worrisome because now, you know, there was that big push last week for everybody to like cancel student loans. And my argument to people was I say, why should we bail you out for making a bad decision? Nobody bailed me out when I tried to buy a $30,000 car when I was 18. They go, that's different. My education is an investment to society. I say my car is an investment to society in the economy. They said economy, not society. Economy, I said, because it gets me to and from work. So same shit, right? But I didn't have to get the $30,000 car. You know what I mean? That was my bad decision. So they go, well, specific fields, I know there's a certain amount of fields that, you know, that you have to go. But you can go to – there's a lot of hard work you have to do sometimes. You might have to go to junior college 2 years, do all your basic general ed, and then the money you save up, go and try to get as any scholarships or grants that's possible. Look for – and anybody else can be going to community college. There's tons of trade schools. I have so many friends that went to trade schools
and community college.
And they're making way more than the people that I know that went to four-year universities. Because the people that went to four-year
without any debt, really.
With pretty much zero, or either they had it to where it was free or where it was manageable till they paid it off within like a couple years.
Exactly. And, you know, that doesn't get promoted very much, but there's a lot of money to be made in the university education system.
Oh,
and that actually ties in really nicely to our first article. We haven't really been going through any of them yet. But
yeah, we're just going off the cuff. I was like, ah, let's see what.
yeah, for sure to catch up. It's been like over a week.
Yeah, man.
So out of France, politicians, prominent intellectuals, and academics in France have voiced concern that an out-of-control leftism and cancel culture from the United States is threatening French identity. They are arguing that American ideas on race, gender, post-colonialism, especially those coming from the U.S. universities, are undermining French society and are an attack on French heritage. The College of Intellectuals, the collection of intellectuals arguing that France is being contaminated by the leftism of America was buoyed on last year after French President Emmanuel Macron appeared to side with them. In a speech in October on the fight against separationism, Macron warned against leaving the intellectual debate to others, as he cautioned of certain social science theories entirely imported from the United States. Now, I found that to be really interesting, because they're actually calling it pretty straight there. Even though Macron is kind of a centrist banker, and he probably is appealing to the right because he's got an upcoming election a little bit, but it's funny that it takes the French to actually call this out.
Yeah, it's kind of great.
I found it real funny.
Especially because they're so progressive.
Yes, and these ideas really originated, a lot of them originated from France. But they're spot on. They are ideas that kind of originated and were seeds planted in American universities.
Yeah, for sure. But do you also? But wasn't France like a big influence as well on like the hippie movement? Like, because they were like the, remember, like, I just always remember being young and, you know, like, because my parents are older. So like they would, like, when you'd hear people talk about French, it was almost like, you know, I know people joke about the French, like, you know, making fun of them. But they also like would talk about like if like, oh, that's a friend. Like they were more like sexually forward, more like progressive on like those kind of ideologies. And I'm not saying they birthed the hippie movement, but I think a lot of like that, some of that ideology, because remember, like, I think like Lenin and all them, they were in France too. I think they hung out there. So I think that was a big influence too as well on the hippie movement, which is what a lot of this also developed from. It's these movements that they break them up, and then they become into like more radicalized because now they believe more. Now that you're trying to take away what they believe in, they want to believe it even more, and then they blindly believe it more because they have no choice because you're trying to take it away.
Yep, and it's kind of a little bit humorous that, you know, they kind of are the originators of these ideas and these things, and then, you know, kind of spreads around, goes through a couple generations, through the universities, and then comes back to threaten their French heritage, their identity, or whatever they want to call it. But, you know, that it's kind of a trend now when a lot of European countries to kind of be calling this out. We're seeing it in Poland, Hungary, Russia even, quite a few other even Western European countries.
Well, maybe it's a way because, like we've been talking about, maybe it's the CCP way of their campaign of kind of like saying, hey, look at America, man. Man, remember when they used to be good? They used to be good, right? You know, and then they kind of like, and now look at them, you know? They kind of like, they're looking down on us, and everybody's just kind of piling on. It's kind of just the thing to do right now. It's the trendy movement around the world and people seeing where it's going. I think people are like putting their money on CCP. I won't put that bet. I still have faith in our country. I know that we're super divided. I know everybody has, but I'm starting to see, and I think I have really good vibes for this year because I'm starting to see a little bit more of people kind of like, all right, yeah, okay. And getting a little bit of them to listen and having a dialogue. Per se, than just arguing back and forth, talking shit to each other.
Yeah, I think we saw that a little bit with the run on kind of the GME stock and going against Wall Street and their short bets. That kind of got broken up quickly with identity politics and just politics in general. And a lot of propaganda was coming from the mainstream media. But I think like this administration and their ties to you know, these mega corporations is going to really wake people up to the fact that it's a class struggle and there's the extremely disproportionately wealthy that are ruling over the vast majority of us that are nowhere near them in financial scales.
Yeah, and that kind of, I didn't put this in or anything, but I don't know if you read about the Wall Street Bets, that the old moderators came back. The old moderators, oh, really? I guess they came back, and now they're taking all the money. They're saying that, like, so they're taking over. So that everybody's saying, like, don't listen. Like, they're trying to, like, get some money off of this, I guess. And that, because a lot of people, I was reading a lot of, like, messages where people are like, this is bullshit. Like, I mean, obviously their message get taken down, but, like, there's this one certain message, I'll send it to you, that it goes around. You know, it's one of those that someone, you know, took a screenshot of and they keep posting it up. So I guess there's, like, a little, of course, someone has to, you know, step in because the peasants got out of line. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So someone absolutely. Had it.
They say, hey, get back in there, go ring them in. You know what I mean? And that's what they're doing. So now
that's
they're
interesting that they bring in the previous moderators. Reddit has a pretty shady history, and yeah. I kind of hold into a theory that Reddit is a kind of a Chinese psyop or communist psyop.
Dude, you're totally on. It's funny because I was listening to my favorite podcast, No Agenda, and they were talking about that. It is like it's funded. It's Chinese funded. It's CCP funded.
yeah, I've read a couple threads on that. And it just, like, from the rhetoric and the way they censor people outside of that leftist thought bubble, it's pretty clear.
And you can tell by their algorithms. Their algorithms are, like, they just push, like, the most weirdest nonsense that makes no sense. They always push those to the tops. Like, falling, like, not just people falling, but you know, like, how they have those really weird videos? You're like, what's it? Like, if you look at TikTok, it's a perfect example. Like, their algorithm, yes. like, puts, like, very weird things in a row. They don't really... like worry about like, oh, we need to have enough people and be, you know, values. They just go put whatever they think will get people's attention. And then if they think that it's threatening, they just put it, either delete it, ban it, or push it all the way down to where you mm-hmm. can't, yeah. nobody will see it.
I definitely think there's a kind of a campaign or a program in place to kind of use bots to downvote stuff that they don't want to appear at the top of those, you know, different Reddit threads. So that's one part of it. There's a lot of facets to it, though.
Well, you can see the I don't know about you, but if you've been on Reddit, you've seen it for a while, right? It progressed. Like, it was way different when it first started. Same thing like Twitter. It's they both were good concepts. It just that things got compromised.
Yep. These are powerful tools, these social media platforms, and you know, the powers that be that are kind of wanting to subvert various agendas or our culture, our nation, they're going to use these platforms against us. And you kind of see it pretty clear with the Reddit as an example. Twitter's slightly different. I don't think the CCP is as closely involved, but I feel like Jack Dorsey is probably an honorary member of the CCP.
By now, he's... Yeah. That leads us into the next...
Cancel culture.
Polish. This is Breitbart. You know, I know any lefty will be like, oh no. You know, I know they don't like Breitbart. It says, Polish government tells Breitbart cancel culture is Bolshevik standard. Cancel culture aims to make people afraid to express their opinion, and big tech is working with the far left to promote their environment, which has more in common with the methods of Soviet Russia than modern Democrats, a Polish government minister has told Breitbart London. I thought that was very interesting. It says, when other countries moved to regulate social media, it was to force networks to delete content. Poland is turning to that concept on its head, legislating to protect freedom of speech online platforms. So they're totally against that. 100%.
Yes, they are. And this deputy minister that they quote from this article, he said an interesting thing is, like, the Polish have a history where they were under the rule of the fascist Nazi occupation for 5 years, and then they were under the Bolshevik communists from the Soviet Union for 50 years. So they know it's like authoritarianism and destruction of the individual liberties is a left-right. It can be either left or right. And they're looking to protect their citizens over, you know, the wills of corporations. I can only praise them and hope they continue to keep that stand.
Yeah, and like we said, with all the censorship that was going on, it's been very weird to some of the people that even spoke out, like Germany, who is not for free speech. Like, really, they're not an advocate for, like, they don't have that in their constitution. It's not made, you know, part of their, like, makeup of a country. But, like, even other countries, like, that were against it, I'm glad people are speaking out because it needs to be spoken out about because big tech is too big. Like, it's becoming a problem, a monopoly that has taken over because the argument of the whole, like we said, the argument of is it a private company so they could do what they want? But then if it's a private company, they can either do whatever they want. Like, you know what I mean? Where does it go? Like I said, can they restrict people because of their age, because of their gender? Age, I think, is different depending on the
content. Race.
Race, religion, culture, creed, ideology. It's all the same thing.
I think we're getting closer to that sort of
baby steps. I think it's like baby steps. I think like, and people don't realize it, and that's the sad part. And some people not only are cheering it on, I think they feel like they're invincible, that they'll never be in the crosshairs, but they really don't understand that things change. That right now you're part of the narrative, but you don't know that 4 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road, the narrative changes, different people, because it's a power struggle. It's not this one person has an idea. The idea is a one world government, but it's not about like one guy ruling it all. It's about trying to put it together. You know what I mean? I think it's a plan that many people have tried but failed. It's not an easy task because you have to have a lot of control of the people, and you have to have every country has to have control of all their people. And that's a very hard task for any president to do in the United States of America. We have so many ideologies. So they've been manipulating us with all this identity politics and all of this back and forth about like corruption and pumping certain conspiracies like Russiagate or, you know, like the Syria hoax where Assad gassed his people, things like that. They push those to the front line. And then they mixed in like and say, oh, look at this conspiracy. So anytime you try to say that, like they just they got a juggernaut with the media. They own Wall Street and the government's huge. You know what I mean? So it's very we do have an uphill battle if we don't unite. If we unite, it's very easy because we just tell them get the fuck out. But with us at each other's throats and not trying to give each other any leeway of like there could be possibly something else going on. There could be possibly a narrative that people are talking about. Maybe it's not lizard people, but maybe there is a lot of powerful people in the world that don't care about you, that your life is meaningless, that you are a number to them, because you really are a number to them. That's why when you're born, you get a social security number. You know what I mean? You're just a cog in the machine. So while you're fighting for these people that have no love for you, that have don't think of anything, that you think, you know what I mean? Like, they don't care if you don't have food tomorrow. They don't care if your gas is off, your lights, et cetera, et cetera. And nothing, we keep voting for them, and because we're at each other's throat, because this guy, he's going to do it, or he's not as bad as the last. That's the worst thing. He's not as bad as the last guy, though.
Not only won't they, do they not care about you, but they will laugh at, you know, the general suffering of the people that are below them. You kind of see that too. It's like the media propaganda kind of, especially with the Time magazine article about how they basically legitimately stole the election. I recommend everyone go read that if you haven't heard of it. There's been quite a few takes on it.
That's perfect. I just popped it up. You're talking about the Times article?
Yes.
Yes, I was just going to tell you, like, let's jump into that, because this is one of the huge topics that I know when I seen it Sunday, I was like, we got to, like, and Tim Pool did a very good breakdown of it. I really liked what, I don't know if you watched it or not, but Tim Pool
did.
I liked what he said, and I'm going to let you take the lead on this, because, and then I'll jump in. I got, like, the article up right now. I'll start with right here. I'm going to say right here this. Where it goes, there was a conspiracy unfolding behind the scenes on both that curtailed the protest and coordinated resistance from CEOs. Both surprises were the results of the informal alliance between the left-wing activists and business titans. The pact was formalized in a tease, little-noticed joint statements of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, AFL, AFL-CIO published on Election Day. Both sides would come to see in a sort of impact beginning inspired by the summer's massive, sometimes destructive, racial justice protests in which enforcers of the labor came together with the forces of capital to keep the peace and oppose Trump's assault on democracy. I started right there to kind of like show how we could break it down. So basically, there was a huge, that they say conspiracy. That's why I started with that. When we're always talking about conspiracy, they even call it a conspiracy.
They even say it's a secret cabal themselves in the text. It's wild. They're either massive hubris on their part, or they're so confident in their power and that they've gained now that they can just kind of brag about it.
And this is what this whole thing is. It's almost like a bragging manifesto of what we just accomplished. We just did that, and there's nothing you could do about it.
Yep.
And
go ahead.
I was gonna say, is there any like parts that stood out to you in this that struck like the most? Like, where were you the most shocked? Because there was a couple times I was pretty shocked about what was in the article.
One of the biggest points that stood out to me was the way they were talking about changing state election laws leading up to the election. And this is going back a couple years. Like, Pennsylvania's election laws in regards to mail-in voting was changed in 2019, October 2019. So that's well before the pandemic. But you see, with the pandemic, it was a massive push to go with the mail-in voting, which is highly manipulative and subject to massive fraud, in my opinion. On top of that, there's a couple other points. The elimination of the need for voter identification, and there's a few other points too. It's quite a long article and very detailed, kind of a, you know, highlighting the big players.
My you bad, know, someone was calling.
Even no worries. including, you know, ballot harvesting and other semi-illegal practices. Like, they're doing a touchdown dance on their way into the end zone with this one.
Yeah, most definitely. They're doing this whole rubbing it in the whole time. That's what the whole impeachment is too, as well. It's just we're rubbing it in, and we're telling you that we're it's all good, dog. That's what called me. I think that what people are trying to, like you said, they're just saying, hey, it is what it is. We had to do it. The most important to me, what they said, that they go, we didn't do this because we don't like Trump, and we didn't do this because we like Biden. We did this because we couldn't have a result where nobody won. And I was like they were some kind of hero or something. And I'm like, man, enough of this bullshit of left, right. You know what I mean? And that's what we're getting. We're getting a huge show of like, are you left? Are you right? Are you a conservative? Are you a liberal? When really most people aren't either. Oh, you can't hear me now? Better?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Say you couldn't hear me. Yeah, they said they can't hear me. Oh, maybe bad sound.
Try again.
Yo, can you hear me?
It cut out for a second on my end, for like from you.
Yeah, when they called, right?
It came back. Yeah, it came back.
Maybe it's a delay in that they're seeing it like a little delay. Maybe like they seen it when it all flickered off. Because I don't know really what the delay time is for some people. Oh, I guess not. Maybe they're blocking some sound.
One said he can hear you now.
Okay. Oh. Okay.
Oh, they can hear me, but not you.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's really...
Well... If you can hear you and I can hear you, at least we can keep it going for recording purposes.
The remainder of. I'm telling you, man, that's what I said. Like, if anything, we'll still be posting up on the RSS feed. Like, you know what I mean? Because we'll still try to do Sundays and everything. But if they do that, we'll just do what we're doing and we'll continue to record and just put it out. You know what I mean? Regardless.
Yeah. One way or another, we'll always find a platform that works for us. You know?
You can't get rid of us, man. But like the most telling was that they felt like they were heroes in the whole thing, that they were the ones that were heroic and they saved America by this little plan, that they had to do it. It's not even that they wanted to do it, that they had to do it.
And I think it goes deeper than just the Trump derangement syndrome, because they're talking about how many CEOs and big corporations, including big tech, that made donations to the Biden campaign. And look at the way that, you know, social media was censoring and fact-checking everything leading up to the election. A lot of censorship, in particular from, I saw on IG, from people on the right. And it's just like, it's plain as day that big tech was, you know, controlling and manipulating the flow of information to kind of have the biggest impact they could on the election. I mean, look at the Hunter Biden story. That was, you know, they even went back and said, oh, it's not a fake news. It's not a hack. He is under investigation, and he's pretty shady.
Well, if you even go look back to 2016 when Trump won, there was people were physically crying in Google. Google was like literally upset. Like, you could see that they were like in a panic and they were like, oh, my God. Like, it's just crazy because they built up this whole narrative. And I think a lot of it was that they just wanted to see the first woman president, which I don't care. I'm down with, but not Hillary. I'm telling you, with all the great, smart women in the world, that's who you choose. Come on, man. With the one that everybody hates, of course they're going to vote for Trump.
Yeah, I feel like they're so out of touch with society and kind of like the regular average Joe voters that, you know, they don't know how unappealing a person like Hillary Clinton is.
See, that's so weird that they can't hear me, though. Now can you hear me?
Yeah. I can hear you fine.
That's what's weird, because you can, like, you would think you wouldn't be able to hear me too.
Yeah, that'd be the thing. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know.
Let's do like, let's just hop off real quick. I'll keep recording and I'll just hop right back on. Like, it would do like a 20 minutes. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Let's do that. There we go. I don't know. You can hear me, right? Can you hear me?
It was lagging a bit there on your end. Try and say something again.
Yo.
Yeah, it's good now.
Like, clear and everything? Can you hear me?
I mean, the thing is, I was hearing you before, too. So, oh, that was one of the people before that was saying she couldn't hear you.
Okay, cool.
So maybe we fixed it.
Yeah, maybe it was just like a little glitch. Because sometimes they do glitch on these, you know, just like on a phone call. You know how sometimes you'll have to hang up and just do it over. And I was like, I was like, I'm recording. You know what I mean? No matter what, we're going to be recording, like I said. But it does seem like a lot's going on our end, too. Like, I'm telling you, like, because I saw these waves of what happens. Like, I've had waves of where I'm getting a lot of followers and a lot of, like, I mean, you always get your people that are unfollowing you. But, now, then I'll get waves of where, like, all my interactions just, like, I'm at a standstill. And then, like, I'll break through and it will just go back and forth. I think, like, I'm just dancing with them because I haven't got really a lot of, like, warnings or anything. You know what I mean? I think I got, like, 3 or 4 total. I know people that got, but who knows, man? Who knows, man? Like I said, with the Robert Kennedys and with the Ron Paul before that, you know, on Facebook, Project Veritas now gone. On Twitter.
Yeah, wow. As of this morning. That's a big one. And that's, if I'm not mistaken, that's coming off of the back of him leaking a video of someone from Facebook in regards to them freezing comments and stuff, if they're politically, you know, not approved.
Exactly. Yeah. They said that he released his personal info, which I'm not sure. I don't know if it was his phone number or I'm not sure what he released.
That sounds like a convenient excuse to have him deplatformed so he's not able to spread his message.
Oh, for sure. But the thing is that people like him, the cool thing for him is that he's already built and established an audience and his own brand that he can hit. He can hold his own anywhere, and he can build another account, and everybody would just go to it. Yeah. Also have his own websites and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Also, you see the push now, since we're speaking of cancel culture still, Tucker, that there's a big push that they're talking about, like, trying to suspend him or do something. I know there's been – but there's actually, like, some traction to, like where people in the Murdoch family are talking about actually maybe suspending him. Just rumors, obviously.
Yeah, I didn't see I haven't had a chance to dig into that. I didn't see what he said in particular that would draw this criticism or the calls for him to be canceled.
Well, first he broke down, like, it was last night, he broke down the whole riot. I mean, the Capitol riot, whatever, the January 6th shit. Uh-huh. And he was breaking it down and he was talking about, like, what happened. Like, he talked about every person that passed away and how they passed away and what happened to them. And then he talks about the police officer, and he talks about that there was no physical, like, didn't look like he was hurt. He was back to the police station. He even texted his brother and told him, I'm good. I just got a little pepper sprayed. And then he came out, and then he said he died. And then he got cremated and all that. And then, yeah, he talked about the riots over the summer. And the protests over the summer, and he said over George Floyd overdosing on fentanyl. And then everybody's like pissed off at that. Like, he didn't say, like, oh, he deserved to die. His argument, which people could say is insensitive, but, like, he's saying that, like, well, you're made all this, you know, riots and protests over something that he would die because of fentanyl. And they're saying that he died, you know, because of the knee, and that's the argument. But they're saying that that was, like, I don't know if they're saying disrespectful. They were just basically calling racist. No one was actually, they were just pissed that he even said that. Because it's so emotional and triggering.
Because he has such a, yeah, exactly. I feel like the people who are very much, like, peddling this cancel culture nonsense have a very kind of childish outlook. And a very fragile emotional stability or lack thereof. You know, any little thing drives them completely off the edge, and they're asking for people to lose their jobs and their livelihoods over, you know, one tweet or so. It's complete madness. You know, we're in full clown world.
Yeah, well, they don't even know what the world is. So that's what I think is kind of humorous, because if this was a time where we were really, really at war, like, where you have no choice, there is no, hey, don't do that. You're talking about people torturing, can be sick, especially once you get to that level where it's like an all-out war. Like, people don't understand the insanity that could brew over with all of this nonsense of bickering and fighting, you know, over these people that don't even give a fuck about you, don't even know your name. They don't even know you're social. You have to tell them you're social, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just nonsense. And if you don't like the guy, fine. But then vote him out. And if you don't agree with voting, don't vote. You can do. We have to build our own life regardless. Regardless if you're in the CCP, regardless in the United States, America, Canada, wherever, right? You got to make your own. And I think that nowadays a lot of people don't understand that. Like, or maybe they didn't. The ones that are the loudest on the left seem to not know what it's like. They say sometimes, you know, oh, I came from this, or, like, you know, like, AOC tries to make it seem like she lived a hardcore life, and she didn't, man. She didn't come from areas that was hard to come by. She lived in the suburbs where everything was nice. She didn't deal with gangs. She didn't deal with police violence. She doesn't understand it. The same thing when people talk about, like, jail and prisons. They've never been to jail or prison, so they don't understand what a jail or prison's like. A prison and jail is completely different in each state. In California, the prisoners run it differently than the prisoners run in Michigan, or, you know, vice versa, everywhere. And the prisoners run it. Why? Because there's more of them than the guards, and the guards know that. They know that if they, that's why they allow them to divide each other, and they don't step in. they let the prisoners divide each other, because that way they can be preoccupied. It's the same concept. Because if we're preoccupied, we're not going to actually go after the true enemy or what's truly attacking us.
Exactly. It's interesting, too. The way that you went into the prison topic there is like, it's very much like the way society is, and kind of everyone's like forced onto social media because there's less personal interaction with all the COVID lockdowns and stuff. It's kind of forcing us into like a cyber prison where they're, you know, putting in these divide and conquer politics and very much like, you know, waging psychological warfare on the people to kind of keep everyone distracted and or complacent.
Which they even do in jails. Like, now if I can go further on that analogy, they give people good time. They have trustees, which are prisoners that are, and usually it's people that have less time because obviously they're not trying to do anything. They're trying to go home, right? Whether you fucked up or not or whatever, if you have a family, you're trying to get home. But they use these, and that's how they get rats. And it's this whole society. And if you look at it on a whole, you can see that's the same society that we're in. We've built the same kind of society. We're in a prison now. And it's starting to sink in where we're like, whoa, we can't do what? Whoa, we can't.
Just look at the term lockdown. Yeah. That comes from prison.
Yeah, exactly.
Locking down the prison block B or whatever.
And how long have they talked about schools becoming prisons? You know, after Columbine, every school started getting meddled. Not every school, because a lot of other schools that were like already like could be dangerous and there were gang areas. They already had, you know, metal detectors and stuff. But then you started seeing the barbed wire and fences. Like they were like, what is this? You're seeing big old gates around it. Maybe not barbed wire, but huge gates even sometimes. Why?
Where? Yeah, I mean, look at the companies that are contracted by the state to build prisons and schools. Exactly. They usually tend to be overlapping or similar, or if not the same, companies.
Exactly. And it's that compliance, like, if you do good, and you know that. Then if you do bad, they do have, even for jail, they throw you in the hole. You know what I mean? They put you, they isolate you, which is a torture. That's psychological torture. They literally, I've seen people come out of jail that were never had any kind of problems, but they were in the hole for like 30 days, sometimes longer. But sometimes it only takes like 15, 30 days, and they're just so by themselves.
Can take less than that even.
Imagine 24 hours a day, you're by yourself. And you're getting nothing, like maybe just the meal and that's it, in a dark room. It breaks people.
Yes. And it's done deliberately, too.
Exactly.
You know, they use us as lab rats. Kind of seeing it now with the vaccines and stuff. I didn't get to include a lot of that stuff in this week's
We'll break a lot of that. I think we could break a lot of that.
The next episode, there's a lot of news coming out of Europe in particular, where there's a lot of deaths happening in nursing homes and stuff as a result, or coincidentally happening after they're vaccinating the, you know, the people that are there, the residents. So in Norway, they're having higher death toll numbers in over 65s that have been vaccinated rather than have not. So that's a pretty good indication that these vaccines are harmful to people who have vulnerable immune systems.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that also it shows that they didn't really do any thorough testing that is scientific enough to actually be broad enough to make sure that they are safe to huge populations of people. Because you could see what they did with that. You see how CDC came out with that mask is. They came with their little study about masks. I don't know if you've seen that.
I saw a headline, but that's it.
Well, you know what the study did? They tested on mannequins, not human beings. They're saying that masks work, and the test. So, like, I don't understand how it could be actual data when what they did was they put masks on mannequins and then seen how much moisture could get out. And I think they were using like a spray bottle or some sort. I'll show you everything. We'll break it down a little bit more on Sunday. But I thought that was weird. It's like, nobody's even, like, batting an eye. That's no problem. They're like, yeah, no worries, man. Like, yeah, you know, that shit happens. Like, what?
That's unacceptable.
No,
that's
unacceptable. It's not a study.
That gets to fly as a study when they're using no humans as, like, you know.
Oh, compressed air. You got it.
Compressed air. Okay. Glad that people are able to hear the sound again.
Yeah, thanks,
everyone
guys.
Came back too. Thank you guys for coming back, sticking with us.
Plus, I like when you guys can help us out to when we forget stuff.
That's true. Yeah, we have a really good audience here, and we really appreciate you guys. You know, you're patient with us. We're new to this, and it's a pretty cool community we're building here.
And remember, if for some reason that we do get deleted, just remember, you can always find our RSS feed and we'll have another account. It would just be like something like Kill the Mockingbird. You know what I mean? It'll be something. I already have another one, KTMB Productions. I'm going to make another Kill the Mockingbird. They're not going to get rid of me, man. I'm annoying. When people don't want me, that's when I want to be there more.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's just, it's crazy that it's being the whole, you know, it's been run into the ground, but the whole Orwellian everything, like that one article you sent me, the Denmark to pioneer digital vaccine passport to restart normal life. So they're just like,
yes.
And I think people are going to jump on this because they just want to get it over with. They're tired. They're fatigued. They're worn down, beat up. They're just like, let's end it. Like, I know a lot of people like that right now. They're just like, dude, just hurry up and give me the fucking vaccine. I don't care. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot of civil unrest coming out of countries in Europe. Denmark's a big one in particular. They've, you know, they've been going ham in those protests too, like burning police cars and stuff. So this article is pretty interesting because it's stuff we've been talking about potentially coming down the pipeline for a while now, and now you're seeing it coming into the mainstream just in time to normalize it for society as a whole. Denmark's government has said digital vaccine passports will be used in 3 to 4 months to restart life in the country. And by the end of February, Danes can check their status online and print off their vaccination certs. Speaking in Copenhagen on Wednesday, Finance Minister Morten Bødskov said Danish companies needed to get back on track to kickstart the nation's economy, and a digital vaccine passport was a key to all of it.
And that's what I'm saying. People are going to want it because they're going to, like I said, they want normal. They want to go to the football games. They want to go hang out at the pubs. You know what I mean? Like, and now they're pushing in Denmark too. You saw, like, they have the Cluster 5. You heard about that? The Denmark Cluster 5. There's a new variant. Yeah, and
no,
it's in
I didn't hear about that. Yeah, was that today?
Yeah, I heard it today. I heard it today. I don't know if that's when it came up, but that's when I heard it today.
Another variant. Yep, so even like I'm seeing articles too about vaccine makers saying like, oh, we've just made a booster that's going to be, you know, for that South African strain or for that strain that came out of England. But even now, there's a whole nother new strain. They'll never be able to keep up with it.
But wouldn't the vaccines work, though, because, like, isn't it the same proteins? Like, isn't that all they're doing, and the proteins stay the same, right?
I mean, not necessarily. Yeah. Well, every time the strain changes, it can be a big shift in the actual makeup of the virus. So there's no guarantee. I mean, just like with the original vaccine, they said it themselves, the makers, that it won't guarantee that you will not get COVID and that you cannot spread it.
Yeah, and they want to, like, make it to they want to make money because all the, like, cheaper treatments that anybody tries to talk about, they just box it out. You know what I mean? They completely try to pretend like it doesn't exist. And I'm not even talking about the hydrochloroquine. That's just the mainstream one, but there's tons of other ones. And anytime you bring it up, they're trying to find a way to get rid of you and get rid of what you're saying or try to make your statement look invalid by a bunch of, oh, this data shows that that won't work because of this. But they won't show us the data on what's happening to people that are taking the vaccines right now. What's the data on that? Because what I've seen, and I'm not saying that I've seen everything, but I've seen a lot of bad bad data that is not being shown on the mainstream media.
Yeah, and they were even hiding the data, the raw data from the trials too. So, I mean, that's why a lot of countries, kind of more independent outside of the globalist sphere, have been very hesitant on kind of adopting the mRNA vaccines.
Yes.
Because there haven't been actual independent regulatory studies.
And that's the problem. They're just, it's experimental. And then now that when people do question it, they're labeled anti-vaxxer right away, whether they believe in vaccines or not. This is a different circumstance because this is totally different. Like, there is that argument for vaccines in the first place, but this one in particular is completely different because of the time frame. And we're led to believe, like, I'm not saying that they cut corners, but how did you do it then? You know what I mean? If it takes me a year to grow a plant, if I grew it in a month, then I did something different. And I think we deserve to know what you did different. And then when we ask that question, we're thrown off. And then, like, we do our own research. And then when we find out what it's about, we're told, oh, no, that's not what it's about. You got it wrong. You know what I mean? But nobody will explain it. It's the constant runaround.
And then
it's
like, you're censored. Don't forget that part.
Oh, yeah. Then you're censored. It's like trying to ask.
And then no one gets to hear the argument.
It's like being in corporate America when you have a problem. They're like, oh, all right, go talk to HR. And then you talk to HR. Well, you're going to have to talk to your supervisor. And then they just give you the runaround until you either, A, drop it or you quit.
Yep. It's going to be a very interesting year. It's, you know, it's all pretty obvious when the media never really talks about, like, during this, every, you know, news piece they do about vaccine distribution, they never really talk about people that, you know, might want to not have it. I just find that hilarious because every time, you know, one of those comes on and pops on in front of the family, I'm like, they never mention people that are going to refuse to take it. Wonder why that is. Because they don't want to add to that conversation. They don't want to have that discussion.
Yeah,
they assume everyone to be a good little boy and girl and go get the vaccine.
Well, I also think it's a step further. I think that what it does is that now those other people that are not really, they're going to get it, right? And once they get it, they're going to be at you. Not, they don't have to come at you no more because now your friends and family are going to, because they're going to be like, well, I had to take it. If I had to take it, you got to take it. There's a lot of people that think that way. Like, one of the best examples I've seen at tons of places I work at is where, like, they go, well, nobody trained me. And I go, okay, well, then you should know more that how shitty it feels to not know what you're doing, and you should train the person properly. But instead, they go, no, well, nobody trained me. Who cares? Then break the cycle, man. Oh, you're going to continue the shitty cycle? Oh, okay. That's how people think.
Very true. People kind of are very quick to deflect, you know, little bits of responsibility. You know, that's not my job. You know, someone else will take care of it.
Oh.
Whereas, like, maybe the best thing you can do for your personal self and the betterment of your surroundings is to actually kind of take a little extra responsibility on and kind of try and, you know, if it's a younger person coming in, maybe it's one of their first times having a job. You know, give him a little mentoring, help him out, teach him the way so he's more comfortable there. And then you're building up. It's there's so much value to that. There's no price of it. Teaching someone to kind of better themselves and teaching them a trade or a skill. There's so much power to that, you know, gets missed nowadays.
Well, there's so much that everybody can get out of it because you get something out of it for helping the person. You build yourself and you grow and you understand now and you see that life is about all of us adapting together and building this coalition of peasants. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's how I feel that they look at us, because ever since even that that Occupy Wall Street, you know, where they look when there was that those hedge fund guys like taking pictures, laughing at everybody. That image never gets out of my head. But I think that we need to remember that we need to keep building. And when you mentor somebody, that shows you, like, oh yeah, and you see that you're actually impacting society, because that is what impacts society, is talking to the youth and letting them know, like, I get it, it's not going to be fair, but there is ways we could get around it, though. You know what I mean? There is ways you can still have your life. Yeah, the cops suck. Yeah, the government sucks. But we can find ways, and if we stick together. But that's the hard part right now, is because people can't see it. You know, it's hard when we don't know their circumstances. Their circumstances might have a different, where they need immediate impact, and that sometimes pushes you to a level that you may not go, more extreme, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's always important to remember, at least for me, you gotta be the change you want to see in the world. So, like, in regards to mentoring. If you were that, imagine if you were that kid that didn't have a clue what he was doing at that job. You'd be hoping that someone would come along and teach you the ropes. And especially for me, been able to actually make a little small business for myself, like that came from people stepping up and, you know, kind of taking charge of it and of mentoring me when I was new to the field, which I am eternally grateful for. And I hope to someday help someone else with.
Yeah. And that's what it's supposed to be. You know, like I worked with this guy, Homero, but that's his name in Spanish, but in English, it would be Homer, right? He was a press brake operator. Great dude. One of the greatest guys, man. He was an older guy, probably like 55, something like that, right? I was probably in my late 20s. And I would talk to him, and, you know, he goes, we talked every day. And as we would talk more, he would tell me, like, you know, when I first started, a lot of people would just like, you don't know what you're doing. Do it my way only. If you don't do it my way, you know, and he would be like, but I would see, like, faults. Because I would give him a little suggestions, and I'd be like, tell him, you know, because he'd been doing it for like his whole life, like 50 years. And he goes, don't ever be afraid to make a suggestion to me. He said, because I've been looking at that one way for 50 years. You're coming out here with a fresh set of eyes. Your eyes are going to just see something different than I've been maybe missing the whole time. And that right there, when he told me that, that changed my mind from everything, because I'm like, that's so true. So one person can give you a piece of information you didn't know. And it's not that you're stupid or you're not intelligent. You just may have overlooked it, especially being so invested in either an idea or, in that case, a field of work. But it's the same concept that you could take everywhere, that, you know, everybody has a valid point and a valid perspective. You don't have to listen. I mean, you don't have to agree and absorb all of what they're saying. But if you do a little bit, there's always a little bit of something you can get out of it. Even in negative interactions, you could turn that into something that is positive for you and more building up. Oh, that, like I said, that always stuck with me. So that's what you're saying, and you're going to get that. You know what I mean? You're going to run into somebody where they're going to need help, and you're going to be in the perfect position to be like, oh, no, you're going to do this. Because knowledge is so key. When someone has done something before you, it's such a shortcut. Man, when they go, oh, man, what are you doing that hard way?
yeah, absolutely. You always have to be a student. You know, no one can really ever say they're a master of any, you know, skill or trade. You're always able to learn more, and especially and the field we're in right now, kind of breaking down the media. This is why we really appreciate the chat. For me personally, I get sent a lot of articles from you guys, and that is big. That makes my job really easy too, because there's articles I miss from my feed and what I'm looking through. So keep them coming. We appreciate you guys a lot.
Yeah, because we need that, because like you said, it's impossible for anybody to keep up on all the stories. The things that help me is I listen to a couple key podcasts, but still, like this story, perfect that you say that, the investigate the WHO whitewash. The investigators back China's claim that Australian beef could be the cause of COVID-19 and demand there be no further study or theory that it came from a Wuhan lab. And it's just interesting that a year later is when finally the CCP allows the WHO to investigate, a year later. And then they're just like, oh, open and shut. We got it. It may be on beef. And it's funny how they're trying to distance the CCP away from the whole story, that they're not involved at all. Again, that it's not their fault. Again, pushing the narrative that it's xenophobic, all the stuff that they're saying about the, you know, Chinese virus, Wuhan virus, et cetera, et cetera.
This is one of those articles you should put, if you're listening, into that file for that friend that might be on the fence, a kind of verge of taking that red pill, about kind of the COVID tyranny / conspiracy that we've been going through the past year, over a year now. This is pretty clear as day. The CCP and the WHO are basically in bed together, and they have been since the start.
Yeah, and now we're finding out that who also is in bed with them? No other than fucking...
I'm going to give you the whole load today.
Oh, yeah.
Again, he says... What does he say again? Oh, they're going to have our lunch. Like he talked about how he, I don't know if you heard a little bit today, he had like a press, not a, It was like a press conference. I don't know what they call them when they're sitting in those stupid chairs in the Oval Office, you know, and they're like having a meeting and they have those little shots where they're trying to be funny. I mean, not funny, but
basically just a photo shoot. Yeah, basically. It's
a photo shoot. But in that, you know, there were some reporters and they asked him something and he was talking about how, oh, I had a 2-3 hour conversation with Xi Jinping and, you know, we had a good relationship. We've always had a good relationship and da da da. Something about we're not going to let him eat our lunch.
We know, Joe.
Yeah,
no.
We know. Yeah, we know. And then the whole that even pushes even more on the whole Hunter Biden thing. But I think that further gives them another thing to guess what? Now, when they're done with the Trump, the distraction, when people are like, all right, I'm over this Trump shit, because eventually people will be. Right now, they're still kind of you're starting to see a little bit of that fatigue where people are like, because when things are trendy, like there's a small lifespan for them, you know what I mean? And hating Trump was super trendy, and even super loving Trump was trendy, you know what I mean? Like people would be like, "Oh, everybody likes Trump. All right, I like Trump." You know what I mean? It's like when two teams, like how many Chief and fucking Tampa Bay Buccaneer fans are there now? You know what I mean? Oh man, I've always been Tampa Bay fan. That's just bandwagon fans.
I don't know
you know
many.
What I mean? I'm saying, but you'll see like more people wearing the jerseys now.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it just always happens. Like when the Lakers win, you'll be like, man, I'm out here in Detroit. I'm like, why are you wearing a Laker jersey, dude? Like, you know what I mean? You know they're not a fan. They just kind of like, it's the same thing. It's the same exact thing.
Bandwagon.
So what's going to happen is the Trump thing is going to die and people are going to be over it. But now they got the whole Hunter Biden. They got the Biden connection with, China, a CCP, and I think that's going to be the new narrative, and then that's a new distraction again to further divide us on another thing, and then we're going to keep arguing about that, and then the right's going to start pushing like, well, Biden needs to be impeached, and da da da. It's going to just be a back and forth pissing contest to where nothing gets done, and it's going to be a gem at the end of each year. It's going to be like, all right, here's all the budget. What's in there? Oh, it's in there. Don't worry about it.
Absolutely. And kind of going back to the Biden's connection to the CCP, what was your take on the whole Myanmar coup? There's a lot to unravel there. I've done a bit of digging. I have quite a opinionated take on it.
I'd like to hear yours, because honestly, like, that's one story like I heard about a little bit, but I didn't dive into that one much at all. I know that China's happy about it. I know that.
Oh, yeah.
Their CCP is like, they're not publicly. Publicly, they're showing a different, they're showing like, kind of like, hey, guys, that's not a good thing. Like, you know what I mean? But privately, I heard Xi Jinping is very ecstatic.
Please go into Myanmar. Not a chance. From the chat. Basically, like, the big take from it is the military, which was in power previously to the actual administration before they deposed, they've always had close ties to the CCP and the PLA, the People's Liberation Army of China, that, you know, buying weapons and getting training from them. And it's just clear as day. This is a very geostrategic move for China because it gives them access to the Indian Ocean. Now, they were kind of isolated. They have kind of an isolated position in the world, you know, only one coastal border out to the world. And the U.S. Navy kind of has a monopoly on that because the U.S. Navy is what it is, the most powerful in the world. But going through Myanmar now, that gives them another a route and another ally that they've been kind of wanting to pick up ever since the Trump policy was kind of to unite various powers around China to kind of contain them. And it's kind of an escalation back and forth. China, in the end, is slowly gaining ground around the world with their salami slicing tactics. You know, they take a little bit of ground here and there and don't cause too much of a fuss.
Well, they also do a lot of litigation. What they try, yes. they use, they use the culture war. They use litigation. They also use like the shaming, like trying to get like public shaming of like, oh, I can't believe you did that. That's so especially like in the like with their feuds with Japan and stuff, because you know how they've been feuding with Japan over that that island. There's and what happened was they pushed so much litigation, and then one day the CCP just decided like, oh, they just put up a base and put like planes on it, and they're like, it's ours now. Yep. And that's just kind of how they do it. They distract you with all these little like litigation and public humiliation and media smear campaigns, and then they swoop in.
Yeah, I mean, with the islands in the South China Sea, they were saying they were only going to put weather stations on them, and they ended up putting like building airfields and, you know, missile defense platforms. But on top of that, there was one interesting development I looked into was, well, two actually. The first one was that a company that was owned by Smartmatic was the one that ran the election there. And that was kind of what the public justification for the coup was that it was a compromised election. Now, whether that's true or not, I forget the name of the leader that was deposed, the female activist, Sung Kyu, I forget her name. I don't want to butcher it. But she's very much a globalist and kind of been on board with types like the Clinton Foundation. So that's one interesting development with that.
And the Soros as well, right?
Soros as well. The second part, which is really interesting, which is one of the articles I sent to you, was the Australian silver mine that was in Myanmar discovered a year ago.
Got it open, right? The Daily Mailer?
No, it is... Oh, crap. Hold on. So it's from stockhead.com. So it's kind of a economics news website. Okay. 4 years ago, a junior explorer and mine developer, Myanmar Metals, acquired a majority stake in one of the greatest metal deposits in history. In 2020, the 1,000-year-old Baldwin polymetallic mine is accelerating towards a big-time revival. When production begins in late 2022, the mine will be the world's number 3 lead producer and top 10 silver producer over a potential mine lifespan spanning many decades. And that kind of is interesting timing because there was a big push on silver right before the coup took place. Wow. So there's a lot of connections to all this, I feel like.
Well, yeah, dang. Now, I didn't know that. That kind of blows my mind right there because that you said that because that coup happened. And, you know, the market of silver, they were talking about it for a while. Like, you know, man.
There was kind of a weird push plus with the media, too.
Isn't silver also big with solar panels?
I'm not sure. Precious metals are involved with the making of panels.
I could be wrong about that.
But China has a big stake in silver holdings.
Because I was also going to say they're the number one in solar panels as well.
That's correct.
So, like, either way, it's definitely an investment for them. They're looking good.
Yeah, that was a big move by the CCP on the global stage, and I feel like it was a massive coup, and it was about 2 days in the media and a little bit of questioning of Biden. Like, one of the other articles I sent you was saying there was chaos in the cabinet, and they didn't know what to do because they didn't want to escalate things with the CCP, but it's looking like it was pretty much just a complete cuck sesh from Biden towards the CCP.
Wow. That's what you're seeing. That's what I felt like was today too. Like, he was just like, oh, I mean, like, why would you say, like, I'm not saying that they shouldn't say they're good friends, but especially knowing with everything, like, you would think that they would be like, hey man, maybe you shouldn't say these certain things when the public view thinks a certain way, especially when you're allegedly trying to get unity. Like, wouldn't you think that there should be certain phrases you don't say? Like, and the way that he talked about Xi Jinping just made the Hunter Biden story look to me even more realistic and even more. Now I think that they're going to get tons of more money for him. Now I see why he wanted to be president, in my opinion.
It kind of ties back to a couple episodes ago when you were asking me about my predictions for the Biden administration. And I said it's going to be the most corrupt in U.S. history. I think we're seeing it.
I think, and this is just the beginning. I think we're not even going to really feel it and really see it until it's obviously four, 5, 6 years after, you know, like after it's in the dust because I don't see people because we're so polarized right now. People don't want to build bridges. I think they will, but like we just got to keep pushing for that. But it's difficult because there's been so much animosity through everything that's happened. You know, people have animosity towards their family or friends or people that have said fucked up shit or done things that's like, you know, maybe they wouldn't do. And then the lockdowns intensified that to where all that, those 3.5 years, those 3 years of people kind of being at each other's throats. See, I was kind of like not really paying attention to it. So I didn't care, you know, like I would see people kind of arguing, but I didn't care either way. I was like, I don't care. And then the lockdowns just intensified it. It strapped everybody's mental health. And they were consumed with everything that was on the media. So they were consumed with the fear of dying from COVID. And then they were consumed with their country either being taken over by communists or by fascists. Like both media networks, Fox and CNN, both play off of each other. They do it very well. It's very well orchestrated. Like I'm not saying that they're intentionally doing it. I don't really know. But a lot of times it does seem orchestrated. But they play off of each other of, oh, this is bad. To them, it's good. This is good. This is bad. Like, they just play each other as villains to each other. You know, Fox is CNN's villain and vice versa. And I think that's why we're so divided, because people are like, well, I'm a Fox News guy. And I know people don't watch them anymore. That's what a lot of people say. But they're still getting that information because that's what's being pushed to the top of the algorithms is the Foxes, the CNNs, the MSNBCs, all of that. And you might have heard it from like some leftists on Twitter, but where do they hear it from? The same journalists, you know, the same articles get passed around like we talk about all the time. That's part of the Mockingbird media. It's having that same message going. They just slap it on a different, you know, oh, this is MSNBC. This is Yahoo Finance. This is whatever. But if you look at the author, it's the same journalist.
If you can control the loudest voices on either side of a debate, you're controlling the whole conversation. So, of course, yeah, I think it's deliberate. They're playing each other off against each other to kind of, you know, like Fox was very different back during the Bush administration. And so was MSNBC and CNN. Oh, and look how much has changed since then.
And now it's
and it kind of evolves to go with the time and the narrative.
Yeah, and I think people are over the news, but it just sucks because all the people they follow, the influencers, all it takes is like a huge influencer that has millions of followers to just watch CNN. And they're going to be like, yeah, did you hear about this? And then they don't even realize the source. Like people don't know the sources and people are like, or they just discredit the source because like, oh, is that some right wing bullshit? I'm like, it doesn't matter, man. It's information. Do you know what information? It doesn't matter. And you would think that if they're such your enemy that you would definitely would want to read it, because you know what they do in sports? They watch the tape of the other team so they could see their tendencies so they can beat them. So if you want to beat people, you got to know what you're up against. But people don't see that either.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of frustrating too. It's like, you know, you'll share something about CNN and people on the right will say, oh, I'm not even, why would you post something from CNN? Like that's complete garbage. This is propaganda. I'm like, yes, I'm highlighting the propaganda and showing and calling it out for its hypocrisy. Of course I'm going to do that. What, ignore it and let people, you know, if one person sees that, it catches their eye and they see, oh shit, CNN's been lying to me. Well, they're lying about this. What else have they been lying about? Like, that is important. You know, that one little moment, that red pill can change a person's perspective and outlook. So, you know, we need to be able to kind of analyze the propaganda coming out of the enemy or the state.
Yeah, and we need to, like you said, show people what it is, because we got to break the and unplug from these, you know, old media sources, you know what I mean? Where you're rooted into like, oh, you know, that's Walter Cronkite. He's going to tell you. He was a liar too. He was part of Mockingbird. They all are. So you got to just, you take some of the information, but you take every information I get from them, I take it with a grain of salt, because whether it's Tucker or whether it's Jake Trapper, you know what I mean? It's the same shit, because they're working in an environment where they're controlled. They're not allowed to say whatever they want. There's producers, there's tons of people going around there saying like, oh, you know, what are you doing? What stories are you going to run? Who are you bringing on? You know what I mean? That's why you could see like on, I don't know if you've seen that, what is it called? The Max, what's it called? What's that Max News? Newsmax, my bad. Mike Lindell was on there And
didn't see that.
Yeah, Mike Lindell was on there, and he was trying to talk about his documentary, which I'm going to watch this weekend, actually. I haven't got to watch it yet. And he was trying to talk, and they were like, well, how come you got taken off Twitter? And he was like, well, I got taken off Twitter because, and he started telling about the fraud and that. And they were like,
oh,
they were literally talking over him. Did you see that? Yeah.
Yeah, and then they're like, the guy walks off.
Yeah, the guy walks off.
The guy walks off the set.
Yeah. I thought that this is like, what is this? Like, let it, you knew what he was going to say. Why did you invite him then? That's what I don't get. I'm like, you knew that he's already, this is what he's been saying the whole time. You knew why he got kicked off Twitter. You knew he's going to mention this. Like, then I was like, well, maybe they're just not as professional, because you couldn't, you don't really see that much of people going off the cuff on CNN or even Fox for that matter. Every now and then, or it might seem like they are, but really isn't. They're, it's all like, hey, man, stay in the line, stay in this region, you know, like they let Tucker kind of have a little bit more free range because he brings such an audience. That's the only thing that he has. I think Tucker would be smart to just step down and just start a podcast, man. Literally.
Absolutely.
That would be the biggest move.
He would probably get a bigger following. Oh, I don't even want to make a prediction on that, but he'd get a massive following with him. It would take people away from corporate media, which I think would be a big win. It's just up to him whether he wants to step out of that comfort zone of collecting that, you know, that weekly or biweekly or monthly check. But there's a lot to that. Back to the Newsmax thing, I feel like, you know, they're kind of gaining ground in actual the cable market and radio, that I think that whole thing was a stunt by them to kind of virtue signal to the corporate media that, oh, we can play ball. Like, let us in, let us in. Yeah. That's what I think that was.
Yeah, I agree on that. And then, like, I think we should, like, end it on this, because, like, that's why I called this episode Pillow Wars. I wanted to talk about Mike Lindell, who I'm not, like, saying I'm not, don't advocate for him. I don't have a my pillow. I'm not, like, I'm not a righty. I'm not a Trump supporter. But this whole Mike Lindell versus that David Hogg, or is that his name, David Hogg, right? Hopefully I get it right.
Yes, the leftist guy made the other company.
Yeah, well, the allegedly other company. It just really irritated me because he's talking about, oh, I'm starting my own pillow company. But what does he do? He instantly jumps on Twitter and he's like, hey, guys, does anybody know a manufacturer? Hey, guys, does anybody know a designer? Hey, God, what the hell? Like, get the hell out of here, man. You're not starting a business. You're using your privilege to try to, like, do some kind of, like, ship-on-demand shit. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck is that, man? Like, I was like, Mike, and that's why I kept commenting on it.
The progressive privilege.
Yeah, the progressive privilege.
We should trademark that.
That's a good one. Oh, man, that's a good one, man. I'm going to have to look that up. That's a nice shirt, man.
That's trademark. That's trademark for this podcast.
Yeah, he just trademarked it.
Everyone else that uses it has to pay it. Yep, it's official.
So I was commenting on his Twitter and saying, look, man, Mike Lindell is an ex-crack addict, and you could call him a lunatic, but guess what? He built his company from the ground up. He didn't go and ask somebody to help him. He did it like an entrepreneur. Now, then some people were posting articles that, like, oh, he had a lawsuit about, like, his pillow, you know, didn't, like, I guess some, he was claiming it would, like, solve some kind of medical issues or something. But I said, that doesn't mean, yeah, after he was big, that happened. I'm like, that doesn't defeat stop that he built it from the ground up. And then this kid's going to be like, oh, I'm going to do the same. No, you're not. You're not doing that. Go do it then. I would give him credit if he did. If he was like, you know what? I'm going to go open a warehouse. I'm going to do it little by little. I'm going to start in my garage. More props to you. Oh, but you're not. You're going to use your Twitter and your blue check mark, and because he's going to run for politics. That's what he's trying to do. They're trying to groom him for politics. I can already see it. He's been doing it since he's been against, and he's a huge against the First Amendment. I mean, the Second Amendment.
Oh, really? Well, I already disliked him.
He's anti-gun for sure.
For the little bit I knew about him, but that seals the deal, really, for me. it's interesting, though. It's like, you know, he has to outsource to the digital hive mind of Twitter to be able to start up this company rather than, like you were saying, doing it himself, starting from the ground up, like start small, build up, and make it a legit business. Now, he's hoping probably set up a GoFundMe, like, help me make a leftist Twitter pillow company or whatever. So,
yeah, and that's what he actually was doing. And what's funny to me is because that shows me that a lot of the, like, millennials, especially the younger millennials and the past that, that they don't realize that you actually have to manufacture things. They think money just happens. Money doesn't just happen. Just like with the whole canceling the school debt, it doesn't happen. It has to be – somebody has to pay for it. Somebody has to find a financial way. Something's going to get cut. And they don't see that. They think that everything can be paid for. So this whole pushing the business, like, oh, it's great. Like, don't get me wrong. It's very beneficial for people like me and you to, like, start a little business to do a print on demand where we're working with somebody. But if you're talking about going big scales and you're gonna do farm out all the work, and you're not gonna do any of the work. How is that your company? You just thought of the name? Like, imagine if I thought of a name and I'm like, all right, man, run the podcast. I'm not gonna do anything or anything, but.
Yeah.
Like, but I got a name. I got a blue check mark, buddy. Don't worry about it. Like,
it makes no sense to me, like, the logic behind this guy's move.
And the left should be eating them alive, though, right?
They should be. They kind of eat some of their – they've been eating some of their own lately, but it's weird, like, little, like, nonsensical things like this that are kind of publicity stunts that get the most traction, you know. And it's sad. It kind of says a lot about where the mental train of thought is at for these the Twitterati at large, you know.
Yeah,
they're very all over the place and not very focused on anything important. I don't know why we and everyone else gives them so much attention.
Yeah, I think it's just that, like we always say, that they're just so loud. It's like, you know, you see it blasted on, like, CNN, and then we all have our little moments of, like, maybe we're having a bad day, and we're like, what the fuck did he say? Like, you know what I mean? Like, for no reason. Like, it's not even really – shouldn't bother us, but – so every now and then a story will get under your skin, because that one did get under my skin, because I'm like, with all this talk of white privilege, you got the most privileged little fucking looking bastard in the world doing the most privileged thing by asking people on Twitter if they can figure out how he can start a company. I'm surprised he didn't start one of those, what are those kickstarts or something like that?
Yeah, or like just make it like a non-profit and just take donations. That probably would have been more effective for him, really, but I don't know. That's the thing. The left in general, and speaking in very vague terms, are not very business savvy outside of, like, elite Wall Street business. Not, like, you know,
entrepreneurs,
brick and mortar business and, like, small business.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, some of the breakdown of, like, America in general. It's, like, entrepreneurs, it's Wall Street, it's the college educated, and then it's, like, the blue collar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, and I would – blue collar is a big, big, huge one, because that's from manufacturing to farming, you know what I mean, to small – like, there's all kinds of – and I think that that's what we clash so much about. Like, those that have gotten an education and got into debt are upset that they're not getting paid, or that some people are getting paid more than them, and that they feel that it's – that they're owed, but they don't realize how the world works, and they didn't figure out their plan, and they can adjust their plan and make it work. But now they feel so overwhelmed because they may have bit off way more than they can chew, and they don't know how to get out of it, and they want someone to save them, which I understand, but how does that save you? What does that really do for you? You know what I mean? Like, what does that do? How does that help the economy? I don't see that. Like, I understand we need to help people, but at the same time, shouldn't we teach them how to fish and not give them a fish? Because then they're going to be dependent. What if something happens to me and I can't help them? So shouldn't we teach them, like you were saying, like, you know, mentorships and building bridges and, hey, you know something that I don't know. Can you teach me that? You know what I mean? Or, like, things to be more self-sufficient. But that seems to be that they want us to stay a consumer society, that we're not self-sufficient, that we're dependent on all kinds of corporations to feed us, to tell us, to entertain us, tell us what to do, when to exercise, when to take a vaccine, when to travel, when we could go on vacation, when it just seems that they want it to be like, it's like being with one of those movies, you know, where they have like that wife that's way over fucking, like she's like scheduled everything. She's like, well, we're on vacation, but at 10:15, we're going to go to this aerobics class. Or, and it's like, no, man, I came here to vacation, man.
Yeah. That's a good analogy. You're very right though. There's a lot of, you know, propaganda, the mainstream media narratives to kind of push more and more dependence of the individual upon the big brother state. Oh. And it's really worrying. You've seen it with COVID. I mean, like the whole nonsense about stimulus, which went back and forth for weeks and still hasn't really, I don't know if it's really gotten anywhere. I've kind of tuned out of that. But why not? I don't know. It's a revolutionary thought, but listen, why don't we just open up the economy? Let people work. Let us go back to our normal lives. Let kids go back to school. And I think you will see a massive recovery. But the longer we keep these lockdowns going, the harder it's going to be to bounce back.
For sure. And also, I think that we need to stop pushing away from these charter schools and some of these private schools and other yes, sectors, because there's a lot of different schools that are different for everybody else. And you know what? If that school can't provide for their students, then they should be shut down. They should not be. There's some in Detroit that are horrible, man. It's just like, it's horrid how like in all kinds of cities, LA too, like you're like, kids go here. And they're like, oh, why aren't they funded? And you know what? They're saying, well, they can't go to a charter school. Why? They should be able to go to any school, the school of choice. You know what I mean? Because if that school's not suitable for children, then it should be shut down. And if it has to be shut down and never open up again, then that's it. Oh, yeah, the Great Reset, that's on its way, man. Yeah, I think we're underway right now. I think that
the, I mean, they got Biden. They got their man Biden in. They're feeling like they're sitting pretty. I think it's just going to be kind of a nice and steady, pretty quick rollout. It just depends. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of ways it could go. I think it's going to go pretty quick. It'll tie into vaccination passports, digital ID, cryptocurrencies controlled by the government. And it's going to also be very closely tied to the, like we discussed in the past, the food supply and who's owning like the food production.
Yeah. That's it. That's definitely.
I think the Great Reset sounds a lot more to me like the Great Leap Forward or the Holodomor. It's going to be a mass starvation event. And I'd say be very prepared, have a good amount of foods tucked away for your family. Honestly, like, better safe than sorry.
Yeah, and like, just I always think about like that too. You buy a lot of that stuff where you go, you know, you could still use it later, like camping and stuff like that too. Like,
yes,
there's multiple uses for it. Yeah, I think you're right. I think like, and I don't think it will affect everybody too, because you got to remember, even through those famines and stuff, like there was still people that had food. Like, and that's the part where it's hard to look on any subject, because everybody has their own personal perspective, and they're gonna be like, "Whoa, that's not how I live. That's not how I," you know what I mean? And there's nothing you can do about that. You just, everybody's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's our time, man. I appreciate everybody that hopped on. I know it was a little choppy of one, but we got through it. You know, we'll be going live again on Sunday. We're gonna do the 5:30 so we could get that little, you know, like cushion to make sure the show's all. We're gonna do 5:30 p.m. Eastern, Pacific, and 8:30 p.m. Eastern. This is Kill the Mockingbird. I'm Sean Crist. This is my I'm the host with Sebastian Seabass Farr. And like I said, yeah, we're gonna be getting some merch out there for everybody. We're trying to build the website. It's become a little difficult, but yeah, you know, check out our RSS feed on Apple, Spotify, everywhere. We got our Instagram. Check out our Kill the Mockingbird. Now it's KTMB Productions, and then we'll be making some more Instagrams, because we may vanish. You never know. You know how we do it: wake the fuck up or get woke the fuck up. And this is how we're gonna end on this. My stimmy's gone, 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 gone. Now tell me what you gonna do. Tell me you depleted your funds and all your bills are due. And all your bills are due. Tell me what you gonna do. When the debit card declines and all your bills.
7, electric due back on the 11. School on's calling every day, but they know damn well that I ain't gon' pay. I be making them wait, my rent is late. Don't hate, but I'm back to the hood juice in the gallon jug. Long johns with the water and crumbs, pocket be filled with them nickels and ones. I thought I was cold, now my feet bout to beat the road. Put the hot water back on the stove, put the top ramen back in my bowl. Hell, hell. Chick-fil-A, Chick-fil-A, Chick-fil-A. Every day, every day, every day, every day. Chick-fil-A, 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 Chick-fil-A. Every day. My rent hit so strong that I had to go with cabbage. I put 125 on pump 9 and Mary. My landlord gave me the boot. I've been keeping them coupons handy. No name brand, don't you even come ask me. That 600, I spent it back in a day. Everywhere I go, and I be wondering if I can get a combo. But no, I can't even buy me no green. My money been long gone, but I cut off my phone. Never call you back, gotta get Wi-Fi. Ain't no reason for me to lie.
I'm bubbling off everybody. And I'm bubbling off everybody.